Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. No Kirk Franklin coming up. All right. Today on It's My House, we're approaching the end of the year, and I consider today, which is Halloween Day? Today's the 31st, Halloween. I consider today day one of a holiday season, because in some places, I got two neighbors that already have, they had their Christmas decorations up 2 weeks ago. Okay. So I consider day one, and to have 2023 start off on the right foot with some momentum. We're going to start building some momentum it started last week. We're trickling in. But we want to have some good momentum to run into 2023. So today's podcast is titled 2023 Daily Habits. We need to develop some habits starting today when it comes to event planning, so we can have a good year for 2023. So some of the things we will probably discuss, daily habits, like I developed, like, let's see, this year I developed two habits, because this year is almost over. The two habits that I picked up that developed this year, and for me, I've got to do something for, because everybody's different, I got to do something for at least 21 consecutive days. And then, for me, it's a habit. So this year, one habit that I developed was start my day at, like, if I can, at 1 a.m., between 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. Now, I might go for 2 or 3 hours and then take a cat nap and then get back up at 7, 7:30, somewhere around that. So I've been pretty consistent at that for 6 consecutive months, a teeny bit over that. And then the other habit is the first thing I do when I get up is I take a Spanish lesson. So that Spanish lesson might be 3 to 5 minutes long. It might be 20 minutes long. On some occasions, 30 minutes long. But I get at least 5 minutes in, I mean, where I can do it, because I do Duolingo. That's the one I do. I also have Rosetta Stone, but with Duolingo, they have, like, short little lessons. So I've done over 180 consecutive days of those lessons. So that's the second. Those are two habits that I picked up for 2022. Okay. On another scale, I've been doing this podcast for 8 consecutive years. On December the 24th of this year, it'll be 9 consecutive years. All right. So for 2023, there's one particular habit. Now, there might be some little sub-habits I'm going to have to do with this one particular habit. I gotta queue it up before. Now, we got Chris Collins on today, and we're going to bring him in on here. But before we get to Chris and other people, other callers, I want to play an audio because this is the one habit that I not want to. I have no choice but to develop for 2023, and I want to get the ball rolling now. So let me see if I can find it. Wait a minute. It's in here. Oh, I think I found it. All right, so I'm going to play an audio that I've played on here many times before, played over fees, but now this is the one thing. All right, let me set this up. We've done over eight consecutive years here where we do Monday through Friday. Sometimes we do weekends because we want to start doing Sunday through Friday instead of just Monday through Friday. That's a habit. But the new habit deals with building. Now, we've got over 2,100 archived It's My Houses. This archived. I've done other podcasts, but for this one, we've done over 2,100 of them so far. And it's this simple. We just add one on every day. So for 2023, the one habit, major habit that I want to develop for 2023 is building at least one structure a day. And that coincides with what I heard on a video last night on YouTube from the Freedom Georgia Initiative. They have Zoom calls every day. So we're going to start that starting this week. But the one habit I want to do is based on this audio I'm about to play right now. And what we're going to do is we're going to dissect it with the help of Chris Collins on how we can develop, not only us, but anybody can develop this same habit. Because imagine if we build something every day. Just build one structure every day.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Okay, so the goal for next year, which we're starting this year, is to build at least one cabin, just one. Now, there are component parts to this, because you need a place to build. And if you're going to do one a day, and this is only limited, this is not limited to your imagination. I mean, it's not limited to your imagination. You can expand. You're going to probably have to think outside of the box. This might be different for everybody, but for some people, you might have to. You might find one place and you build every day in that one place. Another way to do it is, you find a new place to build. Like for what I want to do is, if we build 20 houses in a month, more than likely we're going to need 20 different places to place those houses because we're building for different people. So I typically like to find the land first, but sometimes you might not find a suitable patch of dirt because there are certain things that I look for. One has got to be zoned agricultural, you know, then it's got to be priced right. So some days and some weeks, you'll have more than you can handle. Other times, you know, you can't find anything. Meanwhile, although the land is just one piece of the puzzle, then, you know, although you might be able to build maybe 2, 3, 4 a day. And then that's another part of the puzzle in order to build. I like the assembly line system, you know, where you have a team of people that are putting it together. There's, I'm going back to, once again, from the Freedom Georgia Initiative. That started with just two ladies that said, I'll talk to 10 of my friends and you talk to 10 of yours. And then 19 families came out of that. And then they were able to get 19 families on the same page and they purchased 97 acres of land. And then from that, they're up over to, they got up to about 502 acres of land now. So it can be done. It can be done. As far as building, there's one guy that I know of, I don't know him personally, but last July, he built, or he subcontracted to have built, 10,000 sheds. Now, when he started off, and he started off many years ago, he started off just by building one shed in his garage, and then he built more and more, and then he got a system down where, you know, now he has a number of subcontractors, the people who actually build the shed. He gets the order, they build the shed. He did that 10,000 times last, I believe last June or July. All right. So we're not starting off with any grandiose number like that. What we're talking about, one a day, and we're not talking about one a day as a solo person, but, you know, part of developing this habit is, like, so you got to have a system set up on getting a place to build. That can look differently to different people. Or you can have, all right, this is option. We find land. This is strategy number one for finding land. This is strategy number B or two for finding land. This is strategy number three for finding land. Then the actual building. Are you going to do it solo? Are you going to do it like a partnership, like, in other words, a contractor, a carpenter, and a helper? That's one strategy. Or I know of one guy, he's got, I think he produces anywhere between 3 to 4 per day, depending on the day. But he has a team of 7 people that will put together a tiny house in a day. So, you know, if he does up to 4 or 5, you know, he might have a team of what? A larger team of 35, but they're divided into teams of 7 people per house. All right, but we're going to start off small on what we need to just get one done within, let's say, a 4 to 6 hour period of time. All right, so, you know, like I say, it's, you get them small, you get them small. In any event, somebody's calling me, I don't even know who that person is, anyway. All right, yeah, they're gone. All right, let me go back to my studio. So in any event, now, Delmar, I believe you're out there. If you got any specific questions, raise your hand. And then Chris Collins, well, I'm trying to get in my studio because I can't see right now. Okay, here we go. I'm back in the studio. So let's see. Let me go to Chris Collins here first. And good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Fine, fine. Good morning again, because we were up at, I guess, 3 or 4 o'clock this morning when I sent you a link.
Yes.
And you were up. Okay. So now, Chris, what for what's your strategy on the first thing you would do when it comes to building?
Well, you got to find the land. So identify the property and then figure out what it is that you can put on the property and meet a need. That would be, I mean, you know, as far as building material, we can build any blueprint that's ever been built, any one that ever will be designed. And this is where we want to engage with our kids to do something positive. So, you know, I don't know exactly what the first thing would be other than find a piece of land and identify how big of a home that we need to build on it. And
okay, well, let me give us a scenario. Based on somebody, I've been there, saw something in Chicago. Now, they're in Chicago proper, and they just want to build a structure, not a permanent structure, but a model. It's in the city of Chicago. It's on private property. And let's say the model is 100 square feet, 10 by 10. So, in other words, they have a garage, but outside the garage in the main home, they have a parking area, which is big and spacious enough where you can easily build a 10 by 10 model. So it's not going to be a permanent thing there, but let's say, because there are going to be a lot of situations like that where you can probably do a workshop, a weekend-type workshop or whatever. So that would be the place. That would be one, I guess, one strategy, a place where you can build a model.
Okay. A 10 by 10, if I was going to address that, what I would suggest to that is making it, instead of 10 feet wide, go ahead and do it 8 feet wide and go 15 feet deep. That'll give you 120 square feet, but you can put a bathroom in there. And if you go to 20 feet, you can put a kitchen in. So you have a few choices. You know, that's where it comes down to what should we design, what's the need, what's the use going to be for. But if it's a 10 by 10, I mean, that's pretty simple.
Okay, so, all right, well, you're saying 8 by 15, you said?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the other option would be 8 by 20?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so one you would have a bathroom, another one a kitchen. Okay. All right, that makes sense. Okay.
We've got a 240 square foot. There's a 240 square foot footprint that gives you a bedroom on the main floor, and it gives you, in that footprint, it gives you a bedroom and kitchen and a living area and a bathroom.
All right. Both of those are reasonable sizes. Because I guess people are looking for a kitchen area. Let's see, I think a friend of mine, her tiny house when she had it was, I think it was 8 by 20. Let me see, what does she have? 8 by 20. Yeah, I think it was 8 by 20. And she had a small, kitchen, and she had an enclosed bathroom. The bathroom had a flush toilet, a regular space bowl, and a shower tall enough for me. I'm 6'8", so I had headroom in there as well. So that was on, I think, 8 by 20. That was, I think, 160 square feet. So now Lamar took about a week or so to build that by itself. Well, 2 weeks max. As far as what kind of skilled labor and unskilled labor would you say would be needed to assemble something like this, and let's say a course of an 8-hour day?
Well, doing the electrical and the plumbing and the HVAC,
Chris, let me add this in. This will be an off-grid cabin. Off-grid cabin. So everything's going to be solar. Nothing's connected to the grid. It'll be totally off-grid.
Oh, okay. That would be fine. You still have to have a licensed electrician that would make sure that everything is hooked up correctly. But
okay.
Field Label can most definitely run all the wiring. They can even put all the receptacles together. It's someone coming in and inspecting it afterwards and making sure that it meets the speed. Anybody can do their own electric in their home, but they do have to live in that home for 2 years before they even think of being able to sell it or do anything else for someone else to live in it. So, but we do, you know, we can train the entire little project to do the entire project. So you don't have to have any skills to be able to come in and do this. It's time to learn something that's already, you know, there to be explained in a ABC and a 1-2-3 way of building.
Okay. Now, you got to have somebody, at least a carpenter skilled, because you got to prefab the, your floors, walls, that type of thing, trusses, and if I'm correct.
That's the beautiful thing about doing this. You can have one guy that knows how to lay out a truss, and he can instruct everyone else to be able to do it. And you can build the walls, you can build the trusses, you can turn around and take those walls. So you build the walls, lay them on the ground, build the trusses on top of the walls with a TIG, so you make sure they're all the same. And, you know, I just built some with a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, and the 13-year-old took the screw gun out of my hand once he laid out all the material. He said, here, you don't need to do that. And I didn't, because I never touched the gun again. They assembled that entire little house in 2.5 hours. So it was just a frame. It wasn't stood up. But look what they did in 2.5 hours.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You can start in a school based around what you just stated, which I'm sure you're good at educating people. All right. Now, Delmar, if you're listening, if you got any questions, just, you know, press 1. Or anybody else, 619-768-2945. Now, once, let's say you got your team, so how many would you suggest as a team? You got one skilled person that knows how to make the cuts and everything. What kind of a team, numerically speaking, would you suggest needed to put together something within a 4 to 6 hour period of time?
Was that question asked to me?
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was that. I thought it was.
That was the next 4 to 6.
Okay. If I was going to say what 7 people could build in 4 or 5 hours, they could probably do 4 of those 10-foot by 10-foot houses. They would have all the walls and all the trusses built where all they had to do. They might even have them stood up and sitting there, but more than likely they would just have all the framework done on at least 4 of them.
Okay. And that'll be a team of how many, though?
Of about 6 people. Actually, they'd probably have them standing up. They would do all 4 of those frames, and they would stand them up so they could be closed in. Or they could be packed on a trailer and taken somewhere so they could be stood up. That's the one thing about doing this is you can panelize the walls and show up, and all you got to do is connect A wall to B wall, C wall to D wall, and now you got your 4 walls up. Then you turn around, and all the studs are where the trusses go. So you just set them right on top of it, screw them to it, and start sheeting the outside of it and get the thing closed in. So
okay.
It basically comes down to just, I think, six people could do four of those frames and stand them up in that time.
Okay. Are you familiar with a guy? He's passed over now. What was his name? Jim Walters. You remember, familiar with that name?
Yes, sir. We had discussed that last week.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, a friend of mine told me about him, and I was pretty impressed how he got started. And his core business was basically, he would build a shell, and then he can do more than that. But I thought he had a pretty interesting system. I got in my notes somewhere that he was pretty prolific at it, so to speak. So now, Chris, for people that are just finding about you for the first time, share with us who you are and what you do.
I am the founder of a 501c3 charity called HOPE, H-O-P-E. Stands for Housing Our People Everywhere. And we want to recover and rebuild every natural disaster using the material from the disaster to create a sustainable way of life. And to create a building material that can be recycled 1,000 times, it can last 1,000 years, and give our children a legacy to live on forever and realize that we can do something by a pay it forward, pay it back program. Because every one of these homes are going to become an income, and they're being paid for. And there's no reason to have our kids doing something that they're not receiving the benefit from when they're actually doing nothing but benefiting humanity. So they're going to earn a home, and when they graduate, they'll all build it together, and it'll be a home that they'll never lose.
Right. You're right about that. That's the main thing as far as I'm concerned. It'll be a home that they'll never lose. And we'll get into that in another discussion, but because a lot of people, well, I learned what real estate really is the hard way, because once it's permanent. But of course, if you've got, I guess it depends on the municipality. If it's a more expensive municipality and you have higher taxes and whatnot, the higher the tax base, I think the more can go wrong with it, particularly if your income doesn't keep pace with it. But there are many places here in the United States. That's why I like rural areas, where the tax base might be dramatically lower. And then it's easier to pay the property taxes. And hold on to the property. But in certain areas, I mean, I've known of people, or read stories at least, where people have lost their home because they couldn't pay the municipal water bill. They paid off the bank mortgage, but the municipal water bill was too high, or the property tax was too high. So if you can't keep that up, then the municipality will sell it off. And then you got to start from scratch again. So now with what are some of the current programs that you're running with your organization?
Well, we did start a youth program down in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Hey, Becky.
And these kids went in and they never touched the saw. And they built two frames. And they went and stood one of them up. And they were able to outbuild the adults that were already building next to them, but they built a house that was superior to them. But it's what those kids saw. You know, they never touched the saw, but it's what they saw. Because because after they did the first one, they went back to the factory and built their second frame. I haven't been notified whether they stood the frame up or not, but I did get pictures of what was being worked on this week as far as material, and it looks like there was a very huge building, and the floor joists and everything were made. So they got to experience not only trusses, but now they're, you know, they got to build floor joists. And, you know, we can do a floor joist that'll span 30 feet. That means an open basement and meet the 3,000 pounds per foot on the load that needs to be done. So this material can do some amazing things, but it's what the people are going to be able to do being amazing. So.
Okay. Well, now, the schedule right now, the schedule you in for an event, about how much advance notice do you need?
I would like at least a week. It would be nice if we could schedule it more to the 2 weeks. And I'll schedule out from there, but at least a week.
Okay. Well, that wouldn't be any problem. Now, let's see. You would need, because what I'm just thinking out loud on that right now, if we schedule it in for a build event, what would you need on deck when you arrived?
Well, I would need to know what we're building. I need the blueprint. I need it prior so I can make all the material and set up the delivery for it so it could show up. And that would be basically it. And you know the volunteer list, you know, see who's coming, who's showing up. And, you know, to do these workshops, it won't be a lot of talking. There will be talking, but it's more informing. And then we turn around and we do something. But we do make a difference. When we leave, someone's life was changed, maybe more. Depends on how many of you step up and come up and show up.
Okay, well, let's see. I'm thinking of organizing something up in your neck of the woods in Chicago, because you're not that far from Chicago, if I'm correct, right?
Yes, correct. I'm in Central Illinois.
Right, so, and that's what, about maybe a two-hour ride?
Yes, sir.
All right. So this week, I'm going to see, I got to find a location. So I'm thinking about one of two locations. So what I'll do is I'll throw those at you first once I get a definite end on whoever I'm going to talk to up that way. And then we can start planning from that. And I'll get back to you later today on that aspect of it. And, yeah, because what you request, you know, it all makes sense, blueprints. And that way everything, by the time you get there, everything's there.
Correct.
Okay. And I like what you said. There'll be some talking, but the bottom line is we want people to get hands-on experience with this. So,
and they won't have to be scared by a nail gun going pow.
Right.
You know, this isn't a frightening situation.
Now, prior to you coming for the in-person session, should there be, like, Zoom calls or that will happen? I mean, how do you want to do it? Because the event could be done live as well.
Yes, the event needs to be broadcasted, and people need to be viewing it. That way they can know what to be expecting when we show up. But
right.
Also, they're already going to be educated, so now I got to do less talking.
Right.
So this is where the involvement is. You know, this is
being accountable for what we're saying, what we're wanting to do. But when you say something, there needs to be an accountability and action behind it that make, you know, that follows through. It's got to be that follow through. That's one of the things we're lacking.
Right.
And I want to see the engagement. I'm ready. I've now dedicated my entire year to anywhere and anybody. It doesn't matter if you take me every day. I will go and continue to go and go from one to the next to the next to the next. Because that's
right, what I'm looking at. Yeah, I agree. What I'm looking at is, I know the holiday, like say, I consider today day one of the holiday kickoff because people go on holiday mode with holiday parties, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all this other stuff. But I'm looking at Thanksgiving is a day, just one day. Christmas is a day. All this is just one day. New Year's Day is a day. That's it. But people that, there are people that are in need. Some people have a very critical housing situation right now, and they need solutions. So I'm going to look past the hall. I mean, you got to factor them in, but anyway, that's how I look at it. So we'll take a look at the calendar and plan accordingly. The first one I think we'll probably do up in Illinois, and then hopefully we can get something done here in Florida as well. The weather is more agreeable but down here this time of year. Up there, we'll probably have to do something inside.
Yeah, and we can do that. That's the beautiful thing about this. We can build it inside.
Right.
And, you know, we can take huge empty buildings and go living situations inside of these buildings.
Right.
That are independent, not where people sleep next to each other, but change the narrative. I happen to have an opportunity come up to me this weekend here in my city, and someone had bought a hotel. They got 100 rooms. They want to turn it into another hotel. They're given until March 1st to do that. And I said, okay, since we're going to put this thing under construction for 6 months, I said, I want 50 rooms. And I said, I'm going to work my program through it. I'm going to get these people off the street this winter. There's nobody going to be walking the streets and have to worry about being out in this cold and the rain. It's raining today. I'm getting phone calls left and right. And I want to be able to put them in the rooms, start working with them, but make them, you know, sign a contract, be accountable. It's time to get your life right. If you're not ready to get right, then, you know, continue doing what you're doing. Just don't, I don't want it brought over here and causing someone else not to be able to get right.
Right.
So that opportunity's happening. I'm working on that right now. To me, that was just a blessing that came through because I can do the work, and these people can even, if they want, can help do the work and learn skills that way. But basically, while this thing's being turned over, utilize it and you know, meet a need. So I can get every one of our homeless off the street. So it's a great thing to have happen this weekend.
You know, what was interesting, this past winter, up in Chicago, there was somebody, she was on a podcast, let me see if I can reach her, but last year, they were trying to gather blankets or a generator or something for the homeless, but I guess the good intent was there, but it didn't seem like a very useful, it was by no means a permanent solution. Like I say, in my opinion, the best solution, it might not be the only solution, but the best solution is teach somebody how to build their own structure. That's the way I'm thinking. I know everybody's got a different situation, but if they had that fundamental out of the way, they'd have a roof over their head. So,
and
Alexa, I'll give you a call.
They can have pride, too. You know, they can be proud of what they're living because they built it.
Correct.
And not only will they do that, they can help build others. They can continue to have a purpose. People don't have a purpose that are lost and helpless and hopeless. They don't know where to go. But the one thing about it is when you're down and you're being walked on and not treated right, the only place you have to go is up, but you need a helping hand up, not a hand out. Say, these giveaways are not the answer. It's more earning and learning and yearning for something better. You know, people have lost that drive, and we need people to realize who they are. You got to figure out who you are, not anybody else. You got to figure out who you are. And when you do, you'll start seeing who others are. And we need to actually be accountable. Don't just go get in your $250,000 home and sit in there and not do anything to better what's going on around your community because you moved yourself into another community because you wanted to make sure your kids wasn't around the lower income. Well, there's nobody on earth that's low class. Okay? That's a problem. And those people that are down and they went through things that you ain't went through, you don't know why they're down. You don't know what their story is. You don't know what their – every person is different. There's not one person that's the same. We're all unique, and that's the you in unique. In our own way, we have our fingerprints are different. Our DNA is different. Everybody is different. And no one will ever make your mind up for you, but everybody's making up minds for people. They're judging people.
Right.
It's not our job to judge people. We need the people to judge themselves and hold themselves accountable for what they're doing. But if they don't have the support system to get out of what they're doing, they're going to continue doing what they're doing, and it's just going to be dangerous. It's going to be a struggle, and it's got to change. We have to be the change we want to see.
True, true. Chris, I want to play this audio. I think it's right up, you know, because it's a very interesting – I call it the Tiny House Family. Let's see if I got the right audio.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14 times smaller than the average American home. Well, it is here inside this tiny house where the proud owners are discovering that less is so much more.
Well, in the past year, we've managed to save everything that I earn. We use my husband's income for our living expenses, and I've been teaching public school, so that's about $3,000 a month that we've put in the bank this year.
Hari, her husband Carl, and their two young kids, Archer and Ella, recently celebrated their one-year anniversary in their tiny house. After losing their 1,500-square-foot home to financial struggles, the couple took matters into their own hands, literally. They built this space themselves with just $13,000 in materials. Their goal? To become debt-free and save enough to one day build a new home, mortgage-free. And so far, they're right on track.
Things are going really well with the next project. We're going to build a 16 by 24 unit to begin with, and then we'll branch off of that and add bedrooms.
You may remember seeing this family on The Anderson Show earlier this year, where I joined them on stage. Fascinated by their story, our financially fit team flew down to Virginia to see for ourselves and learn ways we can all downsize.
How are you?
Hey,
really
good. To see you. Hey there.
Living in the tiny house has taught me that we don't need much at all to be happy, and that getting the things that we need can actually be a lot of fun.
Can you get me a bowl and some scissors?
The family's fruit and vegetable garden lets them eat healthier, cut down on their carbon footprint, and slash their grocery bill by as much as 30%. Hari has also been upcycling, as she calls it, taking something old and breathing new life into it.
My favorite upcycling project was the rugs I made for the house. I took old sheets, flat sheets, and crocheted them into rugs. They're beautiful, and they fit the house a lot nicer than if we had gone and bought something new from the store.
The couple also recently switched jobs, not for more money, but more happiness. Carl is enjoying better working conditions at a new restaurant, and Hari left teaching to pursue a career in nonprofit. Being able to afford a career that you love and pursuing a passion rather than a paycheck, they've learned, is just an added benefit to having savings and no debt.
I'm probably taking a 25 to 30% cut in my salary, which is going to enable me to have more time to actually build the house and save money because I'll be the contractor.
It's really a great feeling to be able to make a decision like that, not based on money, but based on what we want to be doing with our time.
The kids also seem keen to the transition. Mom and Dad are happy to report fewer requests for video games or toys now that Ella and Archer are busy playing outdoors on their 3-acre property.
We play down by the creek and up at the big tree up there where the swing is. We play with our neighbors and ride bikes.
And there's a lot of different things they can do with their time besides play with plastic toys and get online.
They've really just embraced it wholeheartedly. You can't stop them from having a good time outside.
Still another lesson, when you downsize, it helps to have a support system.
There's such a wealth of knowledge in our community, and that helps us a lot. And having that support makes it like we're doing it together. Moving to the country has given us a lot of things, not just the tiny house.
So what do you think? What are your thoughts about living in a tiny house? Would you ever do it? Connect with me on Twitter at Farnoosh and use the hashtag FinFit. For Yahoo Finance, I'm Farnoosh Tarabi.
168 square feet. Four people. Their kids are grown now, but they're older now, but you can watch that video. Just type in Tiny House Family. There's probably a lot of them now on YouTube. But 168 square feet. And the barometer that I go by, and that's why I played that audio, is the happy wife. She's able to put her whole paycheck, which I think she said $3,000 a month, her whole paycheck into the bank. Her husband's paycheck covers, you know, basically all the living expenses. And a big part of that is they live in a home that they built mortgage-free. So now I don't know if the $13,000 included, you know, they use part of that to purchase the land, you know, how much, you know, they didn't break that down. But there are a lot of, all across this country, there are people in the situation they were before they built that 168 square foot tiny house, which is, and you heard them say there's more than enough room to build up something bigger on the 3 acres. But there's a lot of people, because it's getting into the holiday season, like, say, Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's Day are just 3 days. The light bill company, they still want their money. The internet company, they still want their money. The tax man still wants his money. If you pay rent, the landlord still wants their money. You got a mortgage, the bank still wants their money. So for people that are, you know, that's why we said we want to build our momentum starting now. So going into 2023. Chris, any comment on that video, 168 square feet, four people?
Inspiring. because it's actually, just as you said, happy wife, right? Those children.
Yep, happy wife. Happy children, too. You're right.
The children were happy. And he said, you can't keep them from going outside and having fun. Okay. Life should be an enjoyment. Our children should be able to enjoy. You know, when they play a video game, they get mad if they mess up.
Right.
They don't, that, you know, when I was a kid, I remember when video games started coming out, but they were, you know, arcade games. You had to go stand up and play them. And
yes,
I remember
pinball.
Yeah, pinball. I mean, you know, they made a tilt thing on that thing because you got down and right. Hey, let's move that ball.
But, yeah, I used to play pinball, yeah.
Yeah, and it allowed you to give it a little bump, but you ain't, you know, you're getting into that game. And the thing is, you know, that our kids today, also the number one video game is building civilizations, and it's not just children. It's adults and children, because right now we got our adults, our children, raising children that don't know how to raise children. And it's because we've never had a home that wasn't dysfunctional. You know, if you look at the word dysfunctional, but the word dis, a dis is when you envy something, you're being petty, you're being spiteful, you're anything in that, you're dissing somebody. You're talking down to them. You're trying to belittle them. And now, if we took the diss away, so now we don't talk like that. You could. I did an experiment. I started a science experiment, and I asked this family if they would do it. And because of what the kids were saying to me on how they were and who they were and why they were. And I told him, I said, you're that way because you learn what you were taught. And because your dad has an anger problem and he lashes out and expresses in this way and it's so violent and, you know, he can't control it. I said, he can control it. But you are you, not your dad. I said, your dad, you might have brought you, you know, part of you into this world, mom too, but you're not your mom.
Right.
You have your own DNA, your own fingerprint, your own mind, and they can't make your mind up for you. So what you do is yell. I want you to scream at me, tell me off, do whatever you want to do, but do it with no facial expression. Do it just in your mind while you're looking at me, and I want to see what happens. Girl did it, and she started laughing. And I said, what are you laughing at? I said, is it because of what you said in your mind to me that I couldn't hear because it didn't come out of your mouth? And I said, because if you notice, I'm smiling and laughing too. So even though you might be laughing at me, you're not making me feel degraded. I said, so you can think anything you want. You can scream it. You can do anything in your mind you want to do, but don't express it. Because you can't take a negative and a negative and make a positive. But you don't need to hear your mouth and hear your voice just to make yourself feel better either. Because you can hear your voice in your head. And they were so receptive to it. And came down to mainly, you know, I asked how the first day of school was because she was happy that she went to school. She said she wanted to throw a chair. That's what stemmed it all to us getting into this conversation, but it was what came out of it. It was these kids, you know, taking me in their home because they were homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And I intervened in their life, and they take me in their new home. It's the first time I've been out there. It's a beautiful home, but they don't have anything in there, you know. There ain't no TVs. You know, there ain't no couches. There ain't no beds. But these kids wanted to take me to their rooms, and they wanted to show me the house. But they take me to their rooms because they took their personal items and they decorated them. And when I seen that their beds were still on the floor, I was so humbled to see how happy they were with how little they had, that how thankful they were. And when I got there, they were all out in the yard raking up the leaves and doing it as a family. It was beautiful because I know they've never really done this kind of thing before. But mm-hmm. they know that they have to work as a unit now and just come down off of, a month worth of being in their life and also talking to them and trying to redirect them on their thoughts. Because what we do is not instinctual. What we do is we're a creature of habit. We get in the habit of talking down to people, and that's just who we are, and we're kind of grumpy, and we're setting ourselves up for a bad day. Well, we shouldn't be that way. We should wake up in the morning and smile and just say, I am so thankful to be here. What is today going to bring? And let's find the joy that you have in life so that way you never feel you went to work, you never worked a day in your life. You got up with anticipation of happiness. And, to me, that is when we find out the true word of humanity.
Right. Chris, I got a question. Now, there's a guy on Clubhouse. He was in a cave. He might come in that room where we were at, Unleash Your Power. I think that room's not open every morning, but it's open most mornings anyway. But he's a guy, he's in North Carolina, and he's homeless, but he's on Clubhouse asking for donations. And he says he's disabled. He's been homeless. Now, I'm just taking the story at face value. For three years. But he does have a Cash App account, which means he does have a bank account. What do you suggest a person like that? What does he need to do to go from homeless to, let's say, building his own home? Now, he claims he's disabled. He can't work. He used to work at Food Lion when he was working, but Food Lion laid him off.
Okay.
And one thing I know he's good at, he's not bashful about asking for money on Clubhouse. Now, he's not bashful about that. That's all I know about him. Like, I'm taking him on face right.
Well, the thing is he figured out that there's people on Clubhouse that are real. They have a heart, and they care. And that guy, I was introduced to him as well, and he has reached out to me.
Okay.
And I've actually helped him a couple of times with some small stuff since I've met him. But it's not like he's just continually hitting me up trying to get something out of me.
Right.
It's more he's interested in what life can be, because what it is right now today, he don't like it in what he sees. And I know he don't want, he might not be bashful to ask for it, but the one thing Clubhouse has done, it's gave a voice to people that's never had one, and it's not like standing out on the corner with a sign in your hand asking for it.
That's true.
So it's not near as humbling to be able to ask for help when there's people in that room that can help. And this is where it comes down. Do they? Who are they? Do they talk this and not walk this? Because we just put a challenge out. I've got the post. I was going to share it over with you. We're challenging elected officials to spend a night in a box before the election and talk about their experience and what they're seriously going to do to change what other people are experiencing that they've never experienced before. And I just
spend a night in a box.
Yep.
That would be an experience.
Yeah, instead of them going home to their $500,000 house and riding home in their Lexus or whatever they're doing, they don't get to go out and get in their car. They come, they don't even get to pick the day that they get to do it. We get to pick it. We don't know what the weather's going to be that day. But whatever
you're right.
It is, you're going to put up with it.
Right.
And you know
boy,
what?
That will be an experience because you don't know. Now, well, they had to go find the box, but they had to go find shelter. Because I imagine some people, man, they might be up all night trying to figure out where can I go that's safe? Where can I go that's private?
They couldn't do it. If we just did that to them, they couldn't do it. They couldn't find their box. They couldn't have a place to find. So I'm saying I'm going to give you a safe place to stay in your box. Nobody's going to hurt you. Because the radio show's going on live all night long.
I love it.
We're not going to interact with you. But what are you going through over there? We're going to be right over here having a party and you can't come. And I want to know how you feel tomorrow because you judge these people when no one should judge no one. The person
right.
themselves need to be judged and be held accountable for their actions. Because I've spoke to a million people. I don't call them out. They know who they are. They know what they said to me. I know what they said to me. I have one of them memories, but I don't hold it over their head. It's not my job to judge them, but I do want to know who they are, and now I do.
Right.
Because once I know who you are, I know what you are. And this is the thing we're not doing, you know, and we need to be.
Hmm. I love the idea if they don't get to pick, because if they get to pick, they complain or plan stuff out. But if they don't know, what kind of clothing they need or you're just saying they'll be in a safe spot.
They'll be in a safe spot. We'll do it at the Coliseum right there in front of it, but it'll be outside, just like everybody else would line up with their tent if they were allowed to stay there.
Right.
But you're going to be in a cardboard box. You ain't going to be in a tent. You better hope it ain't raining. You better hope the wind ain't blowing.
I know of some years ago, I know of a pastor down in Miami. They, to get that so-called homeless group, all they did was walk all night. They never found a place where, like you said, what I like about what you're doing is you're picking a day that they don't know. They don't know the day. They don't know the time. They don't know the location. They don't know the weather. Where these people, they just walked around all night. And anybody can walk around all night. But, that gives them, you're right, it could be raining, and they would have to know how to set up the box.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
But I'll give them a
what
box.
Are they going to do? What are they going to do for a pillow? When they have to go to
the
restroom, right? Where do they go to
that
the restroom
is,
at?
That is their problem.
Right.
So if they go to walk, I'll make sure that bodyguards are going, but they got to go find a bathroom, and they're not going to look like the mayor. They're not going to look like the mayor. They're going to wear the clothes that I give them.
Right.
Because that's what we do, is we give them clothes. So
I love that challenge.
You're going to look just like anyone else. No one's going to know you're the mayor, but we are going to make sure that you're okay. Because we don't want anybody to come attack you because they're suffering.
Right.
I want them to see about if they're going to embrace you and help you because they know how to do it.
Hmm. I know I was in Tulsa once.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but if they go to the bathroom I think they should be charged with public indecency and urinating or defecating in public, because they would charge the homeless person with that.
Yeah, people do get charged with that. They do get charged.
That has to be one of the rules. They got to follow the rules like everybody else. But when they go into the gas station and they don't have no money in their pocket and they can't buy nothing and they can't go to the bathroom, that's a problem.
Right. Well, you know, here's another scenario. Now, that's a good scenario you pick. I'm looking forward to that one. There's another scenario where I remember I was in the airport at Tulsa, you know, waiting on my plane and everything, and I got a call from a lady in Oklahoma City. She was at Oklahoma City. So she couldn't get into the shelter. I guess she missed the deadline, and all the other shelters were at the time filled. And I was in, although I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the airport, the only contact that I had in Oklahoma, the state at that time, was in Muskogee County, Oklahoma. I said, well, if you can make your way to Muskogee, you know, I know a couple of people that can probably help you out. And she was, you know, homeless, but she was afraid to go to Muskogee because she had a warrant out for, I don't know, a bench warrant or whatever in Muskogee. I said, well, basically, you know, you don't do anything else extra, you can go to Muskogee and you'll be all right. But I haven't heard from her since. But I'm saying all this to say there's a lot of situations. I mean, because, you know, getting into a shelter, or what if you get to the shelter and then you're one person short of getting in and they're all booked for the night. So there are a lot of situations. And then the other people who have skills, they have the skill sets where they know how to source materials locally and they know how to build a temporary shelter. Made from wood or whatever they can find. So, yeah, but I like your idea. They got a cardboard box. And they got how many hours are you giving them? You're giving them 8 hours or what?
Oh, no. They've got to start out at noon. So if it's hot, they're going to deal with that. And it's going to go until noon the next day.
12 hours,
so,
okay.
No, 24 hours.
Well, excuse me, Garrett, 24 hours. A full day.
A full day from 12 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Because in that time frame, you will have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
You're going to get hungry.
Right.
How are you going to get your food? You better know where the what time you can eat.
Where the soup kitchens are, if there are any.
If you're not prepared, guess what? Neither are they. and they got to figure it out. So do you. And it's hard to do when you're hungry. It's hard to do when your bladder's full. You know, and I hope some of them have prostate problems so they can't hold it.
Now, I like to take, I like what you're doing with that, and it'll be live. I also like to see something like, well, you take a person, but only thing is, they would have to be mentally sound. Okay, you're out here, and what can you, you can't go into a shelter. Let's say they've been locked out of shelter. What can you do to source the material to build a shelter within 24 hours?
Yeah, no, they couldn't do it. I don't want to challenge them too hard because they're going to fail regardless.
Right.
They're set up for failure. And when they find out that the resources, when they call and they say, we can't help you. We can't help you. We can't help you. How many times do you want to think that they're going to make a phone call needing something and they're going to get told they can't get help?
Each time they hear no, for most people, the average person, depression, it'll set in.
Oh, yeah.
It might be an exception to the rules somewhere, but most people will give up.
And if they give up, what are you giving up? You're going to give up half your salary during being the mayor or whatever so that I can be working with this? You know, I looked at my police force right here in my town, you know. The police chief, he quit. He's a good police chief. I really liked him. Everybody liked him. He was doing a good job. But he was also honest. And the thing is he was honest with his words, even though he knew they were going to make them look bad. Right there in front of everybody at a city council meeting. I called him out. And he answered me. But I said, 5 hours a day out of a 10-hour shift, we're paying police officers to handle and deal with people that are living on the street. Is this a correct statement? He said, yes, at a minimum. I said, okay. So if we got the people off the street, then we could save half of their day. And they could actually do something more productive in helping solve some crimes and different things and stop some crimes maybe from happening versus harassing and causing problems to people that have problems. I said, because to me that's a problem. And he said, that is the problem. Well, he quit. And the new police chief came. And I wound up at a city council meeting, and I had his back turned to the entire room, and I was just sitting there talking to him, and we're having a conversation, and this out loud, and of course, everybody in my town knows when I get to run on my mouth. They all turn around and start listening, because I'm just there to make some points. I speak facts, and that's it. I don't make nothing up. And I asked him the question, and he said, yes, at least. And then he realized that he just said that out loud, you know, and that question was asked out loud in this room. And he turned around, and everyone was turned around in their seats looking at the back of him. And he looked at me, and I said, I just wanted an answer, and so did they. I said, and I appreciate you not realizing that they were paying attention, but they were.
Right.
And I said, how much money do we pay our officers a year to do what they're doing? And they're putting themselves into harm's way by having to deal with people that are trying to survive, that have drug issues, that have alcohol issues. And because they might be drunk, they're not able to really deal with a situation, especially with someone that's being authorized over top of them like they're nothing and I'm everything. And I've asked the police officers right now, I'm asking them, how much is it worth for you not to have to deal with that harassment in your day. Make your day safer. Make our city safer. How much is it worth to you? Is it worth a dime a day? Is it worth a dollar a day? Is it worth $20 a day? 5 hours of your day that you know you got to write paperwork up, you're liable to get a needle stuck in you. What's it worth for the narrative to change? Because we're paying you, but we're paying you to be the problem, and I don't want you to be the problem. I want you to be the solution to the problem.
Right.
And the funding, this funding alone across this nation would give us the catalyst to get this catapulted. But there's so many other ways for us to be financially into this that we're already doing. I've had some amazing things come to this charity, and we've got the opportunity for every phone bill in all 50 states for AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. If you're paying that phone bill, we can get 20% of your phone bill by you putting in your account number in our website, showing support, and pay the bill next month. They will send us a check. Now we have something to give our kids. We have something to give our adults, because there's more homeless children than there are adults. But we have to look at our children as being the solution to every adult's problem, because they are. And they're inheriting every one of them, and they are. So we have to give them an opportunity. But right now, we don't have unity. We're not doing this as you and I together as Y. That's unity. You and I together as Y. Taking that one letter and making it a plural word, giving you the definition of what we need to be doing. And empowering and showing people, every person, there's not one of you that's listening that aren't amazing. You are wonderful. You are a rock star. You're a superstar. You have powers that others don't. And we want to embrace that. We don't want to tear anybody down. We want to pick them up. And just because you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth, or you were born and you didn't even have a roof over your head, that narrative needs to change, and everyone needs a roof over their head. We can do it by working with our children, working with our children, doing something they enjoy, but also something they can go see, something you'll be able to see, but something you can go anywhere in the world and be able to see and know that these kids and the people and you and what you're doing is making a difference. You know, I got 17 states in the United States that we get 20% of your electric and gas bill. And you'll pay the same thing today you will in 2 years. It won't raise any more. So I know everybody's seen the rates. They're going up. And they're going to continue to go up. This locks you in. It locks you in, and it shows support that you're supporting something. So now we're going to get 20% of that lockdown money. But that's your bill. Pay the bill. You're already paying it. I didn't ask you to go get the bill. I'm saying, look, you're already paying it. But now we got 26 countries. So now I got 17 states in the United States, but we got 26 countries that are doing it. And we need to get that message to them. And sharing is caring. So knowledge is everything. And I was, you know, hanging in a discussion. What's the first thing that you need to be a success? Knowledge or action? Well, you have to take action to get knowledge.
You're right.
The one thing you have to do when you're taking that action is just pay attention. It's free, and you can get people's education. You can get their experience, and it don't cost you anything. I surround myself with people with MBAs because, or PhDs, or and whatever they have set out to do, I love talking with them, because I can pull what they know out of them with just listening and then seeing what they did. I'm like, all right, we can duplicate it, you know? what they're giving you, and when people, that's what I love about Clubhouse, when, and just like this podcast, what we're giving you for free. And all you got to do is pay attention. And your mind is so powerful. Now, visualization and hearing things are two different things. So as you're hearing this podcast, you can only take in 40 megabytes of information per second. But if you were visually doing something, that's why we want to do these workshops, visually doing something, you can process it 200,000 times faster than hearing it. So we want you to absorb, because you're all still sponges. But the thing is if you feel like your sponge is full, your brain is full, and you're not sure if you can bring in some more information, then ring it out. Because all the stuff that you've learned has been bad, and we want to work with our children that their brains are empty, but what they need to be filled with is all of their dreams, their imaginations, and reality. Because every dream is a reality that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And I'll mic it.
Chris, you just made me think of about a TV show. They've got them on demand on YouTube. Naked and Afraid.
Yep.
I like your version's more scarier. 24 hours. They don't pick the day. I'm looking forward to that.
I don't think they are, but you know what? I'm going to put that challenge out to every mayor, every politician. If you're going to represent the people pulling you out to spend one night, because if you spend you have a 24-hour period helpless, hopeless, and alone, you have a mental problem. And then you are just like everybody else, and you can't judge them people anymore.
Shoot, I throw that out to some pastors as well. You know.
And them too.
Yeah.
Them too. I'm calling out all the churches. I want all the needs to be met. If need is met, then I got what I wanted. And I'll be able to enjoy life. So I can't enjoy life until I know other people are enjoying life.
Right.
And that's been my life for 17 years. You know, how many people can say, I just turned 50. So one-third of my life, I walked away from profit. And said, no one will ever take my life from me again. I'm going to give it away. But what it hit me on the month that it happened was Katrina. I was laying on my couch, and I watched everything I was seeing on TV. But what I was hearing was New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. New Orleans was flooded. Mississippi all the way to Mobile, Alabama was destroyed. But we didn't hear about that. I'm up here in Illinois. I heard about New Orleans. So I drove down there. I met with Mayor Nagin. I made him one question. But it was a statement. I made a statement. And then he asked me a question. And then I made another statement. But what I said is, don't ask me for money, and I won't ask you. Now, that's pretty clear, right? Got a college educator
right
in here. He says, okay, what's on your mind? I said, I want all the recycling. And this is just the way I said it. I made a statement. I want all the recycling material from Hurricane Katrina. And he says, I need $250 million. Now, I just asked this college educated man not to do that. Sure, I was down there on my dime and on my time.
Right.
But I came up out of my chair and I was about to beat him in his office because I just asked him, don't ask me for money. But I don't put my hands on people, but I'm telling you how I felt because I knew that there was hundreds of thousands of people that needed me to be that voice for them, give them this opportunity that they never got. But I did build a home there in 2006, and I built it in Bloomington, Illinois, the Pantograph. So you go to pantograph.com, and you can archive that story. But that story, it was in July of 2006. They did the story, and the house was built here for 25% of what a local contractor wanted to build the same home. 2,500 square feet on stilts, right on the water. They wanted $250 a square foot to build it. We built it for $60 a square foot. In 2006, 1 year after the anniversary. You know that house saves $11,000 a year in insurance versus the wooden one next door to it that's 1,000 square foot smaller?
Okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, come on, there was the kicker. That's a smack in the face. Man, 11 grand? That's more than it cost me to live in a year.
Right.
So they're paying that in insurance. You know, $22,000 for insurance to insure a house on the beach. And this house is paying less than what it did before Hurricane Katrina took the other one. Because it gets 20 for fire, 20 for wind, and 20 for water, and it's also termite-free. It's also seismic. So when you add those five savings to it, it brings it down to less than half of what everybody else is paying. Because
right.
There's bylaws in the insurance that they don't tell you. In residential building, so continue to keep buying these wooden homes and you'll continue to pay these inflated prices in these mandatory states that have made insurance mandatory, and they charge you what they want to charge you, and they give you the coverage they want to give you, not what you really need. So we want to build a home that don't burn, don't absorb water, stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable. Build it without a dumpster, build it cheaper than wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home. Now, there's 10 positive reasons not to build out of wood. But your insurance companies have a bylaw in their thing, and they don't tell you that. But if you build out of this material, they have to give you these discounts.
Okay.
And they won't tell you that. So people need to know that. Because they will not tell you that. Because most of the insurance agents insure this material because it's commercial material, not a residential material.
Well, there's a lot we need to learn.
A lot.
Definitely a lot.
And that's how we
can
get this.
Well, Chris, I'm looking forward to that challenge, or whoever would accept it, because that's a bold challenge.
Well, if they don't accept it, then we know who they are.
Right.
So now we can. Now we are already addressing the problem. So if you want to elect somebody into office. Let's challenge them to the problems that they're saying they're going to deal with. Let's go give them a little in-depth
taste
detail
the medicine.
Of what that.
Right.
Yeah, let's get some hands-on experience. Walk a mile in someone else's shoes because that's what you're going to do because they ain't going to be yours.
I know in Miami some years ago, I saw a video earlier this year on YouTube where there are people homeless living under a bridge somewhere down in Miami.
This was a number of years ago. And I think they ended up moving them, the city moving them someplace else. I might have to watch that video again. But long story short, the politicians who, I don't know if they just got a prison or whatever. I don't know. That's why I need to watch the video again. But whoever wrote those ordinances never did what you just mentioned, which is they never had to sleep on, they never had to live under a bridge.
Correct.
Yeah, they never had to do that. So, because if they did, they'd have a different point of view and would write the legislation differently. Let's see, we got a caller
That's
here. 773, your mic is open.
Yeah, good morning, and I've been listening pretty much. Had to take a call, but stay connected. The reference there about the living in the box, et cetera, what Chris talking about, and interesting, one of the transitions that happened in our whole nation that's really serious is that if you check the background of most of the politicians that are in Washington, even in the state level, there's a gap between the reality of what's happening and the conditions these people even come from. And now they're so rich and wealthy, they cannot even identify with what people are going through. So not only are they making legislation, it's like there's just no connection. And when you look at the old system of representation, going back to the Bible, the person had to come from among the people he had to represent. That's the only way he could represent them. But one of the things they're saying here, oh, Lord, the last two governors, that the one they have now and the one they had before then, both those guys were billionaires. And one of the campaign point is now, we've had these billionaire governors and they're just not getting it done. And, of course, I'm not making any political promotion here, but it's an argument that's worth of looking at is how in touch are people today really with who the people they're supposed to represent? And I've heard of many, many stories where the representatives living in multimillion-dollar housing structure and the people they represent are the lowest in their community. And yet they're supposed to represent them driving around the biggest. So it's just a disconnect that is serious, and I'm glad that Chris brought that up. That's what we need more people to do is really identify with what people are going through and see if they can get some sense of what the solution would be from their standpoint. And again, that's what Jesus did. Jesus lived in connection with people. He was not heavily bound. He was down here, God in the flesh, and therefore he's qualified, if I can put that in. He can identify with every issue we deal with because he lived this life, and you can't get out of touch with him. So thank you for giving me a chance to share that.
Well, you know, a lot of local mayors, like you take the mayor of Chicago, I like to see Mayor Lightfoot. I like to see her live in the box for 20. I mean, put in those conditions that Chris was talking about, or any of the aldermen or councilmen up in Chicago. That's on a local level because Chicago has no shortages of homeless people, and the pastors of the mega churches. I like to see them go through the same thing. Because what about that pastor in New York City? The pastor in New York City about a month or two ago, maybe 2 months ago, he got robbed of over $250,000 in jewelry while giving a sermon. He got robbed in his own church. And his wife.
Again, this is the world. Disconnect. No real representation. It's not true representation at all. I think Chris trying to say something.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was letting you guys go. You're hitting it, you know. If you look at the churches, all right, they talk about tithings, all right. If you go back to the Hebrew word of that is tenth, okay? That's why they come up with this 10% of what you make should be what you give to the church. Now, you know, I run my charity. I've never been paid a paycheck, okay? And no one in my organization's ever taken a paycheck. We don't have any funding to take a paycheck because we're not doing anything in that aspect of bringing in money. So if we were earning a paycheck, it would be a different story. But what's going on with these charities is they're getting paid. They get grants. They can't speak up. They cannot say anything about the legislation that's been done. But the difference is I've never taken government money. So I'm taking a stand. And, you know, my city turned around and fined me $7,360 on the 19th of October because I helped the homeless. It's never been developed in Bloomington, Illinois. And I own it. No bank owns it. And I got charged $7,360, and they're telling me I have 35 days to pay it. I don't have the money to pay it. I was supposed to have a lawyer in there representing me because it's my entity. It's the charity that got this fine. But they threatened me to get, they're putting me in jail if I don't pay it. And I'm throwing a challenge out to my city. I want a penny from every one of them, or a dollar from every one of them. Either one. If they give me a penny, there's 100,000 people here. That'll give me 10 grand. That'll pay the fine. If they give me a dollar, that's $100,000, and they won't have no homeless on the street this winter. What do you want to do? Is it worth a dollar to not see anybody suffer? So a penny a day will take the homeless problem away, truly, because we have 7.5 billion people on the planet. How many people can cover a penny for people that can't?
Everybody.
So let's cover 7.5 billion pennies, give them up, $3.65, cash app it to me, it's a tax write-off, and we are going to make it happen. That is 20-something billion dollars. That if 7.5 billion people gave me $3.65. And that would just be for the first year. And we can end this. We can spark it. We can do everything. We can put two of these machines in every state. Each of these machines make 36,000 linear feet of material a day. They don't ask for lunch. They don't ask for a break. They don't ever show up late. They don't complain. All they do is do what they're told to do to give you something to do. Did you get the clue? It's here. We just need to do it. And that's what it takes. You know, that's why I'm here. I told him I would make a commitment because I'm committing my year. What can we do? I'm here. I'll be there. All you got to do is share. Tell me where your problems are. Tell me what you want to do. And we'll come there, and we'll take people out of the dark. We'll take the blinders off. Because people just act like they're better than others. They don't look sideways. They don't see. And that's not good for you and me.
Never has been, never will be.
I'm sorry?
I said, never has been good and never will be right. It's just not right. It never will work. You're right. It'll never work.
Well, the thing is we have to be accountable for our actions. And if you say something, do it. I've had a million people tell me they're going to do something, and I promise you I haven't seen it. That scares me. Because there ain't very many people that can say they spoke to a million people. But I have. I've done this for 17 years. I've went all over. I've done a lot of things. But it's what people do after that because it goes in the back of their mind. It's so hard for us to retain something on our conscious mind. You know, we take in 40 megabytes of information per second on our conscious level. But on our subconscious level, we bring in 200,000 megabytes of information. I need people to use their brain. They need to keep tapping back in and not forgetting. See, I went out to 600 businesses in this community, and I said, hey, will you support this charity so I can get the people off the street? I'm going to give you an advertising thing. I'm going to get people to come in here and shop at your business, support you, because I want to support all local businesses. So I want to get them in here to support you. But if they come in and they say they're a Hope supporter, then give me back 20% of what they're spending, 15% less than your advertising budget. And I said, but if it don't work, you don't owe me a dime. But I'm going to spend my own time and my own money. I'm going to push this. We'll see what it does. And the thing is I didn't have anything to put at the point of sale. And people would go to these establishments and forget to say Hope when they were paying their bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the businesses said yes. Without a doubt, they said, well, it's a no-brainer. Don't cost me nothing if it don't work, right? And I said, right. But if it does work, you're going to make more money because you ain't going to have to pay that advertiser. I said, you don't know if they're going to come in or not, but I'm going to go physically. I said, what's the best advertising in the world? Word of mouth. Well, use your mouth and spread my word. I'm not saying anything to hurt anybody. I'm not trying to make anybody angry. But the thing is if what I say did make you angry, then maybe you're part of the problem. Maybe we need to address that. Because I don't feel that I'm saying anything to anger anybody. But I should make you go, And, you know, my mission in life is to ignite a fire in your heart that water will never put out, start an inferno that will never burn you. But give our children a legacy that will live on forever.
Hmm. Well, Chris, I'm going to let you have the last word on that. Delmar, any closing comments?
Just amen what Chris is doing, and I'm working to get to him. We work with that. I want to be one of those that does what I say. Thank you.
Now, Delmar, you have your Fan Passion podcast on tonight?
No, I'm going to pass on tonight. I'm getting this transition to tomorrow, so I'm going to let tonight be off, so I'm not going to give that. I'm starting a new session here, so just going to pass on that for now. Thank you.
Okay, now, will it be on AMs in the future or still PM?
Yeah, it might be the same. Right, yeah, we're still going. I'm just taking
time
off.
Oh, same time,
the
PM tomorrow. All right, so
yeah,
Tuesday night, what time tomorrow in the phone number?
You know what? I'm embarrassed to say I haven't got the time set for tomorrow, so I'm still in transition here.
Oh, okay,
so
no problem. Well, just look at the people, Fan Passion, on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll have it. Thank you, Chris. I really love that challenge. I love that challenge. Now, I'd like to see, ask just some of these pastors. Some of these pastors.
That's a generous from a woman. That's actually a homeless woman that I'm working with in North Carolina that made that challenge. And I'm going to send you the link as soon as this is over.
Sure, man. I appreciate it. Boy, that's a TV show right there.
Pass it on to me, if you would, L.A. Pass it on to me.
Okay, I'll pass it on to you, Delmar. Because like I said, a few years ago, I'm going to see if I can get them on here because I haven't talked to them in a few years. They did something, what I guess I'm just paraphrasing, what it's like to be homeless. So they were out. They just spent the whole night. They didn't do a whole day. But they just basically walked around all night, which basically anybody could do. But there's a whole lot more out there. But we'll pick back up on this later. All right, on that note, Everyone have a good rest of the day.
Thank you, Ellie.
Okay. Have a great day.